when my writing partner and I first ended our partnership, and at the very beginning stages of it, I was suicidal. And not that I actually attempted suicide, but there was a point at which I thought, what reason do I have to be here anymore? And it was because of what I said about my identity being based in the entertainment industry, or it was because I had my identity based in the entertainment industry. So I felt like everything around me had crumbled. And I really gave up. I felt ugly. I felt not equipped. I felt not smart enough. And I just thought that I wasn't a success by the world standards. And I really would like to say that sometimes people look good on the outside, but you never know what's really going on the inside. And we use the word self-esteem. We talk about self-esteem. And there's a lot of shows or motivational speakers that will say, work on your self-esteem. But this is for me and for anybody out there, that you have to pause a minute and to really think about that, because there are some people who are hurting so bad because of their self-esteem. And so for anybody out there who feels like maybe they're alone in self-rejection, someone else said you aren't good enough, or they didn't like something that you did, therefore you take that on yourself, I would just say I can relate to you. And I really used to cry. I was crying like every day, just going through the, what am I here for? What am I doing? I'm not good enough. And I realized, and I heard God's voice say, you're enough. And I had to feel like, even if I didn't have 2 pennies, if all I had was 2 pennies in my wallet and a roof over the head and barely something to eat, maybe some Top Ramen or something,
You're right, yeah. Yeah.
but I'm still enough.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I learned from that scar, or those scars of just really not believing that I was good enough, was that what I do as a writer, or what I do as a teacher, what I do as a communicator, is not what makes me good enough. What makes me good enough is just simply that I am a creation of God, and God doesn't make junk. If I'm still here, I still have a purpose.
Yes.
So, there's more scars than that, girl. Body image, self-esteem image, things that where people on the outside will go, you're beautiful, you're smart, you're wonderful. And sometimes we have to encourage ourselves in that.
Gosh, I'm so glad. Thank you for sharing. And when you say sometimes you have to encourage yourself, that is very real. That is very, very real, because what you're getting from the outside, I want people to understand, you're getting a lot of information from the outside in. The world is telling you through social media, through traditional media, that basically you need to look like this, you need to have this, you need to be like this person, you need to have these things, you need to have come from this background, you have to have this level of education in order to be enough or to be someone. And that is not the truth. That is just not the truth. And I'm so glad that you shared what you shared, because nobody looked from the outside looking in. Like you said, would ever look at you and think that you thought that, had those experiences, they would say, okay, she's beautiful, she's intelligent, she's educated, and she is successful. And that was just in the cards for her, so to speak. That was just her destiny. I don't know what mine is, because I don't look like her, or I haven't had that experience, or I haven't had this level of education. And it's just not true, because God made you the way you are. Individually, like God needed you to be here. God was like, no, I want to show up in the world like this person. and to do things through this particular individual. And I'm just so glad that you shared that, because people just don't know what you've been through. They, you know what I'm saying? Like, just because you have a smile on your face, you put some little makeup on or something like that, people like, oh, child, she must just be good to go. Like, child, no. That's why I wanted this platform, because I want people to see the truth behind the everything else, behind the success, you know? So thank you so much.
Sometimes I feel like, you know, it's awesome if you have a produced credit, like what the Clark Sisters is. It's my first produced credit at a later point in my life, not when I first came out of the gate. That's amazing, but that doesn't identify me. Mm-hmm. That's not what identifies me. That's not where I get my identity. My identity has so many more layers than that.
I love that. I love that, because a lot of people do feel like their identity is based on their job, their title, how much money they make, their popularity, especially these days with social media. It's like, how many likes and followers do you have? Yeah. And so what would you say is the thing that has made, what would you say has really opened you up the most for success? Is it because you now feel like you know what your voice is, or?
Absolutely. I think that journey of discovering, and I'm still discovering my voice, but I also think humility and also just really continuing to work on your craft. Yeah. If you love your craft, you'll work on your craft. Some people see the entertainment industry and they're like, I want to get paid. Everybody's getting paid. Or maybe they might be addicted to fame or what comes with power and fame. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that that will last long enough.
Okay.
I don't think that that would, in other words, it's not going to sustain you. What has to really sustain you is to be willing to look at, I can even look back at the first script I've ever written and be like, that sucks. Like, maybe there was some raw talent there or whatever, but always knowing that, you know, they talk about in the Bible, iron sharpens iron, like you think of a knife being sharpened, you know, when it's getting to be as sharp so that it can be useful, so that it can be purposeful.
Yeah.
And I think that that had to happen to me. And I think it happens to all of us. You know, Malcolm Gladwell was the one who talked about, you're not an expert at something until you've done 10,000 hours of it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would say to anyone. When you first start out, don't think of it, and I've said this a number of times, getting kind of tired myself. Don't think of it as a sprint. Think of it as more of a marathon. And so do you want to endure? Is it something, my friend always teases me because I said this and she's like, girl, you ain't telling the truth. I was like, would you still write or direct or paint or dance or act if you were on the beach selling pookie shells to make a living? That's what I used to say to my friend. I said, I would write even if I had to be on the beach selling pookie shells for a living. And she was like, girl, you lying.
Wow. That's significant. That's significant.
And that's the starving artist thing. And, you know, yeah. No one wants to be starving where you can't even think straight and you don't know if the lights are going to get turned off or not. But I will say there has to be a level of dedication, because I think some people skip the part of wanting to really enhance their craft and really work on their craft. And sometimes I remember I met with Spike Lee once earlier in my career, and he was so cool. And my former writing partner and I went into he was in the editing bay editing Malcolm X. And he said, some people need to go back in the woodshed and work on their craft.
Wow.
And I do agree with that. Sometimes that what I did, I say Moses backside of the desert, but you could call it going back to the lab, going into the woodshed, just kind of retreating a little bit. And I would even say that, like with the whole social media thing, sometimes it's not about how many followers you have and stuff. That's cool. Mm-hmm. But is your craft worthy? Has it been tested? Has it been tried? Has it been perfected? Has it been honed? Whatever that is, whether you're a singer, a musician, a screenwriter, a producer, a camera person. And if people give you feedback, be willing to take that feedback. I teach screenwriting, and sometimes I have students, I can tell I have to kind of work with them. The first time you give them that feedback, they're like bristling and they get stiff. And I even have students, I'll give them notes on a script and they won't change it. They won't change one thing. They may change one word in a scene. It's just like,
wow,
that's not how things work. And if you can't do that, like they sometimes say, if you can't run with pony, what are you going to do with thoroughbreds? You know, if you can't take a little bit of feedback or critique, positive critique from someone on a small level, or when you're in a training stage, what will you do when you're in a room with an Oscar winner, Robert De Niro, or an Oscar winning producer, or the producer of Wicked and La La Land, Mark Platt? What will you do? Because believe me, no one's just going to read the first draft of a script you've read or any kind of creative product that we might have and just be like, that's brilliant. We love you. Come on, let's go. That's why it's a long haul, because there's oftentimes rewriting. I tell people, I often write 30, 40 drafts of a script of mine before it's ready to be seen.
Wow.
You know, wow. TV moves a little faster. You don't have that opportunity, but you're actually working with a writer's,
yeah,
with a writer's team, like in a writer's room with other brilliant minds. So it moves faster, but for like a feature.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
10 minimum, you know, maybe 10 minimum, but there's interim drafts. There's rewriting and rewriting and rewriting scenes and trying to make them better and trying to make them stronger and trying to elevate. So you have to be willing to do that work.
So be pliable. Be like water. Don't be
pliable,
like,
be tenacious, be committed to the purpose that you said you're here to do. Be committed to that and know that it takes hard work. That's not saying you're not going to have some break before that 10,000 hours. It doesn't mean that. What it means is that we have to continually think of ourselves as learners and wanting to elevate whatever skill that is that we have. And I think that someone, if you're kind of lazy or if you want to coast, then you, I don't want to say the word lazy. Maybe some people are just passionless or they're not sure what they want to do yet. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's important to not say, this is what I want to do, this is what I'm going to do, and not be willing to put in the work.
Wow. That makes all the sense. Absolutely. So would you say then that a person ever really arrives, so to speak? Because we're talking about this, you know, cultivating yourself and growing and learning and being a lifelong learner. So does this concept of arriving,
I wouldn't say arrive. I think a person becomes assured. They become a sure hand. Someone like Martin Scorsese is a sure hand in his directing. Mm-hmm. He may not totally be arrived, because we also, as artists, we're also subject to the critique of the viewers of whatever we see. So someone could say, I love The Irishman, and some people could be like, too long, or not my flavor, or it dragged her point. That doesn't mean that the filmmaker is not a brilliant filmmaker. That doesn't mean Martin Scorsese is not a brilliant filmmaker. But he's arrived because he's dope and he knows exactly what he's doing. He knows how he wants to set up his shots. He knows how he wants to work with his actors. J.J. Abrams is a brilliant TV writer, and he knows how to build a universe. He knows how to build a world. He writes and creates great projects, and even supports and executive produces other amazing projects. Like, I think J.J. Abrams was one of the executive producers on Lovecraft Country.
Yeah.
However, has the person 100% arrived? Not really, because again, art is subjective. Yeah. So while you can be an expert at something, which I think a lot of these people are, that still doesn't mean that you may not do something that doesn't land with your audience at some point, and maybe have to go back and sometimes go to the tool shed and rethink things.
So everybody can have a tool shed experience and they don't need to feel bad, because even the top people in the business, in the game, are still going back because they have viewers who are different generations, all that kind of stuff, looking at their things. Yeah. So
they've arrived. What I will say is that I think the best of them, they may not go back and have to learn, but usually we have peers who we trust. And sometimes we're like, okay, what do you think about this book? Or what do you think about this thing? So somebody who's honest, who loves you, who's a peer in your field, who's willing to give you honest feedback. We all ought to have feedback. And even someone who's a genius, like I said, like a Martin Scorsese, or like, you know, a J.J. Abrams, or like the creators of, let's say, a great example would be Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
people loved Game of Thrones, and it was a brilliant TV series. And the last season, you got all of these people doing these petitions on it should be completely rewritten by different writers. Wow. As advanced and as arrived as the creators were, they arrived because people were like, this is dope. This is the best thing I've seen, you know, since whatever. But there can still be moments where our art might not do exactly what we want it to do.
Wow. Well, I think I totally understand that. I think that is, it makes all the sense. You just keep, I think if you
it's
just
in the lab,
try to be who you, just be your best version of yourself, maybe.
Yeah. Keep being a student of life. Keep learning. Keep being willing to kind of go back in the lab, get feedback from people you trust.
Love it, love it, love it.